Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the CBS News Roundup ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Coming up, the Supreme Court takes up a historic case of presidential immunity.
Whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents.
Demonstrations over the Israel-Hamas war tear college campuses apart.
It's not peace, love, and understanding like in the 60s. You know, it's the opposite.
In the Kaleidoscope with Allison Keyes segment, conservative black networks are reaching out for black men.
In their mind, they feel black men have been overlooked by the Democratic Party.
I'm Allison Keyes in Washington. The nation's highest court this week heard historic arguments in the unprecedented case of presidential immunity. The issue is whether former President Trump is immune from criminal prosecution for official acts he took while he was in office. Trump says this includes efforts to overturn the 2020 election.
The president has to have immunity. This has nothing to do with me.
But during nearly 3 hours of oral arguments, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson asked,
if the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with abandon while they're in office?
The big questions are, will the justices make a decision and what will it be? We asked CBS News White House correspondent Linda Kenyon.
One of the central issues that came up in the arguments and the questioning from the nine justices was, what is immunity? Does it extend to public acts, official acts of a president, or does it extend to official acts as well as private acts? And how do you distinguish between the two? So the court could do one of two things. The court could decide to send the matter back to a lower court to determine what is an official act and what is a personal act, or it could rule on the case itself. Either way, the Supreme Court does not work with much swiftness because it deals with some of the most weighty legal issues ever to come across the legal system. So a fast track for the Supreme Court would be maybe by June at the earliest, but most likely later than that. And what that means is that the special counsel who is running the case against Donald Trump on the insurrection issue, the January 6th riot, may not be able to try that case before November.
So let me ask you this. The former president basically insists that he is immune, and he says it's not about him, it's about presidents need immunity. What did the justices have to say about that?
You know, there was a lot of skepticism, I would say, from both the conservative and the liberal justices. One of the arguments from the attorney who was the prosecutor in this case said that the founders never intended blanket immunity. The founders knew that an unchecked head of state, for example, could be the same thing as a king. The president of the United States is not a king and therefore does not have immunity for absolutely everything he or she will do. Now, former President Trump says that the case is not about him, but it is totally about him and future presidents as well. This president, this former president, is going to be watching very, very closely because he has 4 criminal cases pending against him. And if the Supreme Court determines that he is immune from prosecution for anything he did while he was president of the United States, both official acts and unofficial or personal acts, then none of those four criminal trials are going to go forward. Now, there is another case that is going forward now in Manhattan. That is the hush money case. That involves actions that the former president took before he was president. So that would not fall under that blanket immunity, and he would still have to face whatever the verdict would be in that case.
What are lawmakers saying about this? What are people in the public saying about this? Have you had a chance to take a look?
Well, I will say that there's kind of a split. Donald Trump did speak to his supporters in Manhattan before and after his court appearance in the hush money case. He's been using that, by the way, as a very good platform for him to campaign, to air his grievances about the current administration, to talk about his efforts to return to the White House since he can't be on the campaign trail. And of course, the enthusiastic supporters are still enthusiastic. It has not whittled away at his support in any way. However, those who are on the fence, those who aren't sure, maybe they voted for Donald Trump the first time, but may not vote for him a second time, they may be persuaded by these cases. I will say that former Senate Majority Leader, current Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, had said during the impeachment of Donald Trump, the second impeachment, that he did not vote to convict in the Senate after the House impeached him. And he said that there would be an avenue for that when the president leaves office, and that's called the legal system, the court system. And then he would be having to face the charges against him. And now that he's facing the charges against him, McConnell was asked just the other day, how does he feel about that? And he said essentially that he felt it was highly appropriate that that the courts would have to decide this. So there's mixed reviews. Those who are supporters will not be swayed, and those who are on the fence may be swayed. Lawmakers are watching this very carefully. So are the president of the United States and future presidents, because this case, as Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch said, this case will be one for the ages.
That's CBS's Linda Kenyon. The Supreme Court also heard arguments over Idaho's near-total abortion ban and a conflict with federal law. CBS's Jan Crawford.
The justices were sharply divided over Biden administration arguments that federal law, which requires hospitals to provide necessary stabilizing treatment, including abortions, overrides Idaho's near-total ban, which permits abortion to save a mother's life, but not when her health is at risk.
Idaho law says the doctor has to determine not that there's merely a serious medical condition, but that the person will die.
Liberal justices provided real-life examples of women who have been denied abortions in states with restrictive laws.
Her life is not in peril, but she's going to lose her reproductive organs. She's going to lose the ability to have children in the future, unless an abortion takes place.
But some conservative justices noted that in Idaho, doctors can perform some abortions if they believe the woman is in danger of dying. Raul Labrador is Idaho's attorney general.
They continue to say that this is putting women's lives in jeopardy, and it is not.
Idaho officials say the Biden administration is trying to find a backdoor way to broaden abortion access. But Stacy Seib, a high-risk pregnancy doctor in Idaho, says physicians are now afraid to perform abortions even if the state law may allow it, over fears they could be prosecuted.
We need to be able to help take care of people at this point.
Coming up, protest royal colleges around the nation. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
We'll be right back.
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. Tensions continue to rise in the Middle East and are making waves in this nation as well. The Biden administration has determined that 3 Israeli military units and 2 civilian units have committed what it calls gross human rights abuses against Palestinian residents in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. This is a baby born in Gaza by emergency C-section after her mother was killed, dies less than a week later. On Friday, several rabbis and peace activists were arrested near the Gaza border as they tried to take food supplies into the war-torn territory. President Biden and 17 other world leaders are demanding that Hamas release the hostages it took in that terror attack on Israel October 7th, as the militant group releases a propaganda video of one of the Israeli-American hostages believed to still be alive. We begin our coverage with CBS's Deborah Pata.
Shalom.
The Hamas propaganda video showing Rachel Goldberg Pollan's son Hirsch speaking with an amputated hand is the first proof of life she's had since he texted her on October 7 saying, "I love you."
Hirsch and I are both left-handed, and now he's not left-handed anymore. It was truly just an overwhelming moment.
In recorded messages, Goldberg Pollan has repeatedly urged her son to stay strong.
We love you. Stay strong. Survive.
It was a very powerful moment as a mother.
I don't know if he hears it or if he feels it or if he knows it, but I am ordering him to survive.
It must have been a very difficult Passover.
Oh, Seder was brutal, and I think that that was the right Seder. It was the authentic thing to be doing, was to be crying out and begging for freedom.
Remarkably, Goldberg Pollan's anguish over her son's abduction has not prevented her from seeing the suffering of others.
Hundreds of thousands of innocent people in Gaza are suffering, and I know one of them really well, and his name is Hirsch.
Her message to those negotiating a deal:
it requires loving and caring about your people more than you hate the other. Let's be human. Let's figure it out. And let's end this.
Until then, Goldberg Pollan says she will run to the end of the earth to bring her son home. Deborah Pata, Jerusalem.
There is turmoil on campuses around the nation over demonstrations against the war in Gaza. Police used chemical irritants on protesters at Emory University in Atlanta, where people were arrested. And the University of Southern California says it is canceling its main graduation ceremony after barring its Muslim valedictorian from speaking.
Ohio State University joined the growing list of colleges demonstrating against Israel's war in Gaza. Earlier Thursday, a similar scene at Emory University. Social media video showed officers tearing down tents and appearing to use a taser on someone pinned to the ground. It came a day after more than 50 people were arrested at the University of Texas at Austin. Both police and protesters have at times crossed a line, says Greg Lukianoff, the president of the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression.
You don't have a generalized First Amendment right to, you know, turn the public area of a campus into a camping ground. But definitely we've seen at places like Emory and places like UT Austin, police taking things much too far.
Most detained demonstrators have not been charged with violent offenses, but there have been several instances of threatening and abusive behavior. Our Nancy Chen spoke to one Jewish student at Columbia University who grew up in Israel.
Many of us knew people or the music festival or that lived nearby. I'm sorry, I'm getting very emotional about that.
I can see you're getting emotional.
And adding to that, the situation where people scream hateful speech, who have harassed and attacked both verbally and physically people, is just making it impossible to be here.
Lukianoff says the lack of constructive dialogue between both sides on college campuses points to broader failures in American academia.
Campuses should be sort of citadels to self-reflection and asking yourselves, do I really understand this? Would I benefit from talking to someone that I disagree with? And I think that universities, particularly elite universities, have gotten really bad at doing this.
Jason Allen, CBS News in Austin, Texas.
A major blow to the case that started the Me Too movement, movie mogul Harvey Weinstein, had his felony sex crimes convictions overturned by New York's highest court. CBS's Jerika Duncan has been covering this since the scandal broke in 2017, and we warn you, it's disturbing.
Disgraced former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein remains behind bars after a New York appeals court ruled he did not receive a fair trial. Weinstein's attorney, Arthur Idala.
This was a case about perversion. Well, in that courthouse, the trial, the laws were perverted because there was so much pressure, because Harvey was the face of this movement, that he had to be convicted.
The court found that in 2020, the judge, quote, erroneously admitted testimony by allowing women who were not part of the case to testify that Weinstein had assaulted them. CBS News legal analyst Ricky Kleeman.
He would get a more fair trial, according to the Court of Appeals, because these other prior bad act witnesses will be excluded.
The decision comes more than 4 years after the 72-year-old was found guilty and sentenced to 23 years in prison for sexually assaulting two women. Lauren Savon, who never testified in court, says in 2007, Weinstein masturbated in front of her at a dinner party.
Do you think overturning Harvey Weinstein's conviction has an impact on whether or not people who say they've been sexually assaulted decide to speak out?
It will 100% have a chilling effect on victims coming forward. I mean, think about it. Think about how hard it is to come forward in the first place. You know, whether or not you're even believed.
The New York District Attorney announced plans to retry the case. But keep in mind, Harvey Weinstein faces a 16-year prison sentence in Los Angeles for sexual assault. His attorneys say they plan to ask a court to review that conviction in light of today's ruling. Jerika Duncan, CBS News, New York.
Do you really need that shower?
Take a shower every day? You might want to take a cue from Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis.
You're putting water on the children?
I know.
Are you trying to melt them?
We're bathing her.
That's like the fourth time this week. Their body oils are going to be destroyed.
Experts say the famous couple has it right. Washing away the day's grit and grime may make you feel better, but it doesn't do a bit of good health-wise. The way environmentalist Donica McCarthy sees it, frequent bathing is performative, or perfumative, for the sake of what someone else might smell. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
Coming up, an exclusive chat with the Pope. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. In a CBS News exclusive, Norah O'Donnell, anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News, interviewed the Holy Father, Pope Francis, on Wednesday. It is the first extensive one-on-one interview with the U.S. television network. Their chat comes ahead of the Vatican's first World Children's Day. People of all faiths turn to the pontiff for guidance on the most difficult issues around the globe.
Oh, my goodness. Bonjour, Your Holiness. What an honor. So wonderful to meet
I
you.
Love to meet you.
Love to meet you. Yes. Thank you so much for doing this.
We met Pope Francis at Casa Santa Marta, the guest house where the pontiff lives instead of the lavish papal palace. At 87 years old, he may have trouble walking, but he had no difficulty sitting down with us for an hour-long conversation.
How's your health?
Ella está bien.
My health is good.
In nearly every address,
que sofre tanto per la guerra.
The Pope often calls for peace. He condemned Hamas's October 7th attack, but has also called on Israel to use restraint.
There are now pictures of starving children coming out of Gaza. What about those that call that a genocide?
Genocidio.
Genocide. Every afternoon at 7 p.m., I call Gaza to the parish. There are about 600 people there, and they tell me what's going on. It's very hard. Very, very hard. Food goes in, but they have to fight for it. It's very hard.
I know you call for peace. You have called for a ceasefire in many of your sermons. Can you help negotiate peace?
I can pray. I do. I pray a lot.
During World Children's Day, which is the end of May, the UN says over 1 million people will be facing famine in Gaza, many of them children. What can be done?
Not only Gaza, we should think about Ukraine. Those kids don't know how to smile. I tell them something, but they forgot how to smile. And this is very hard when a child forgets to smile. That's really very serious, very serious.
Do you have a message for Vladimir Putin when it comes to Ukraine?
Por favor.
Please.
In los países en guerra.
Countries at war, all of them.
Detengan la guerra. Busquen.
Stop the war. Look to negotiate. Look for peace. A negotiated peace is better than a war without end.
His Most Holy Father is considered one of the most influential people in the world, leading nearly 1.4 billion Catholics. He is the first pope from the Americas, the first Jesuit, and will host the Vatican's first World Children's Day next month.
I love that you take the kids in the Pope Mobile with you and bring them up to the Apostolic Palace when you say a prayer. Why do you do that?
Los niños traen siempre un mensaje.
Children always bear a message. They bear a message, and it is a way for us to have a younger heart.
De rejuvenecer el corazón.
Francis is also the first pontiff to make climate change a priority. In 2015, to make an important point, images of the environment were projected onto St. Peter's Basilica, the dome designed in the mid-16th century by Michelangelo.
What do you say to the deniers of climate change?
Mira, hay gente que es necia.
There are people who are foolish, and foolish even if you show them research. They don't believe it.
¿Por qué?
Why? Because they don't understand the situation or because of their interest. But climate change exists.
El cambio climático existe.
¿Qué senso?
His progressive style has made him popular worldwide, with millions coming here to St. Peter's Square to catch a glimpse of the Holy Father.
It has made us emotional, just being here, going into St. Peter's Basilica, going into the Sistine Chapel, just tears coming into our eyes because we're actually, you can feel the spirit.
Sophia and Aaron came with their family from San Diego, California.
How did it make you feel when he came out of the window?
It made me feel good, like butterflies in my stomach.
Still, the number of Catholics in America is dwindling. In the U.S., only 20% of adults identify as Catholic, and that's down from 24% in 2007.
I wonder if you could speak to those who don't go to Mass anymore, or maybe don't see a place for themselves in the Catholic Church.
I would say there is always a place, always. If in this parish the priest doesn't seem welcoming, I understand, but go and look.
Lo comprendo. Que busquen, pero siempre hay.
There is always a place. Do not run away from the church. The church is very big. It's more than a temple. It's more. You shouldn't run away from her.
CBS Evening News anchor Nora O'Donnell. CBS News also wanted to take a pulse of the Catholic Church in the U.S., and we asked people about their relationship with the church and what they want to hear from the Pope.
I would describe the Pope as transformative. He's a one-of-a-kind papacy.
I think he has done a great job talking about the marginalized, the poor, the care for the environment.
We support him. He is our guide. Like the church he leads, Americans' opinions of Pope Francis are diverse.
He's got some things that I agree with, some things maybe I don't agree with.
We always need popes that challenge our way of thinking, and I think he's doing that.
While a majority of American Catholics view Francis favorably, many we spoke with thought the church needed to evolve. 83% of U.S. Catholics want the church to allow the use of contraception, and more than half think the church should recognize gay marriage.
I think they do need to bring women into the church.
They need to ordain women as priests, and they need to allow priests to marry.
Everything changes, and sometimes I think the church needs to change too.
A recent survey found more Americans were leaving the Catholic Church at higher rates than any other religion.
I feel like I could just be spiritual anywhere. You know, I don't really necessarily have to go to a church to, you know, and I feel like that's the old school way of thinking.
I think there's been a lot of bad news about the Catholics, the religion, about the priests in general, and I think people have turned around and walked away from that.
CBS's Nikki Batiste. Coming up in the Kaleidoscope with Allison Key segment, Conservatives and Black Men Matter. That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Welcome to the Kaleidoscope with Allison Key segment, where every week we discuss issues including income inequality. This time, we're talking about the Black Conservative Foundation, a network of Republican activists targeting Black men in six battleground states to get them out to the polls for former President Trump. It is working with his campaign, leaders say, because the Democratic Party has pushed Black men aside. CBS News campaign reporter Torian Small, who happens to be a Black man, went to Georgia this week to meet with the BCF.
It's a trend that we're seeing not just with this group, but with ancillary groups connected to or familiar with the Republican Party nationally. In lieu of an organizing infrastructure from the RNC, GOP, and frankly, the Trump campaign, we're seeing these groups develop this outreach strategy and specifically targeting Black men. I think they're picking up cues from what we saw in 2020 and recent polling suggesting that that may be the strongest inroads to convincing Black voters to at least peel away support from Biden, if not fully back Donald Trump in November. And the Black Conservative Federation, this was the group that held the gala a couple of months ago in South Carolina where Trump was the speaker. They decided that Black men would be priority number one, and they're looking to do targeted outreach campaigns in minority dense districts in six battleground states across the country, including Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Florida.
Talk to me about their policy plan, Black Men Matter, which sounds suspiciously like Black Lives Matter.
It's definitely an offshoot of that, or at least that's top of mind and why they're formulating this plan. They're looking to bring in conversations, or hopefully in their minds, center conversations around the importance of Black fatherhood and the importance of men in the Black community, because in their mind, they feel Black men have been overlooked by the Democratic Party. And they've pointed to some examples of how the Biden campaign has done outreach. Biden often touts the advancements under his administration for Black women. The most Black women confirmed to federal courts, of course, Ketanji Brown Jackson, the first Black woman to ever sit on the Supreme Court. But they're arguing that those conversations often do not include progress towards Black men. So looking to seize that opportunity, they're looking to spotlight Black men, talking to them about not just maintaining the Black family, but how conservative values could get them to that point.
I believe you talked to the founder of the BCF, and he basically said flatly, the Democratic Party is not Black man friendly. Is that what you're hearing from the voters you've talked to as well?
Yeah, I'm in Georgia doing some reporting on this, and I met with a few members of Georgia's Black Republican Council, another ancillary group that's focusing on Black voter outreach. But they have men centered at the front of their campaign as well. And I talked to six different Black men from all different age ranges about why they left the Democratic Party and when they left. And, you know, some were as recent as 2018 is when they switched over to lifers. A 70-year-old man I talked to said that the reason why he's never been a Democrat because he just didn't see Black men being the priority or at the front of Democrats' priorities for as long as he's been alive.
I saw that recent poll from the Wall Street Journal that suggested that 30% of the Black men polled in swing states are thinking of voting for Trump. Is that the feeling you're getting, or is this going to go higher? Because what I hear from voters is they don't think the Democrats are talking to them at all, meaning Black men.
Right. I am not necessarily getting a sense that there is a wave of converts when it comes to Black men looking to shake things up in November. I think that poll is telling because it says that Black men are more open to considering Republican ideals and potentially a Republican candidate for president than Black women. I think in that same poll, it said around, 30% of Black men say they could consider voting for Trump, but I think around 12% of Black women say they wouldn't. So I think if anything, it exposes the disparity in maybe outreach efforts from Democrats to Black voters, but especially when it comes to men and women. But Black men I talked to in the Atlanta area, just in a little bit in Fulton County, they have overwhelmingly said they are not interested in talking or supporting Trump, but they aren't necessarily enthused about another Biden presidency. Some voters I talk to say, while they'll most likely vote Democrat in November, they're not happy about it. They're not happy about the candidates they have to choose from.
I'm curious. I know you've been focusing on Black conservatives. Did anybody say, listen, if the Democrats want us to support them again this time around when we don't feel that the economy has been good for us, we don't feel that you're talking to us, did they say anything about what they think Democrats should be doing that they're not, or are they pretty much just done?
There is an overwhelming consensus among Black Democrats I've talked to here, Black male Democrats I've talked to here, that Democrats have not done a good job of marketing the successes and implications or the impact those successes in the Biden administration has had on Black men and Black communities. They want more, surrogates out speaking directly to why a Biden administration post 2024 is more beneficial than a Trump administration post 2024. They want to see more advertisements featuring faces from people in the community they know. They want to, especially make sure that the Biden campaign personalizes their outreach efforts and bring folks to communities that look like them and that they know. It's much easier to believe surrogates if they're from the community versus, big name celebrity Democrats or rising stars within the party to parachute in to explain why a vote for Biden this time around will make a difference. And I should also say, you know, the conservative panel that I talked to, they also acknowledge that there's work to do on the Republican end. Again, in lieu of infrastructure, the party shut down most, if not all, of its minority outreach centers across the country. In lieu of that, it's these smaller groups that have to do the heavy lifting. So they're even telling me that, you know, while they would love to see Donald Trump make inroads this cycle, he has a lot of work to do in order to ensure that that happens.
I've got to ask you, in some of the former president's recent rallies, for example, I heard one where he talked about how the black people love him, I believe was his term, because he had faced prejudice the way that they did. He said that black people were buying out the T-shirts that he was selling with his mugshot on it and the gym shoes, quote unquote, or sneakers, depending on where you're from in the nation, that look kind of like, you know, knockoff Air Jordans. Did anybody express any concern about that, or they just think it's a funny thing that he does?
That was something that I brought up with the panel, whether or not Trump making a pitch to, I don't know, maybe relatability to black people because of their distrust of law enforcement, whether or not that was effective. And they believe so. You know, they kind of echoed a lot of the things that he was saying about how he's being unfairly persecuted and how, you know, black men should know more than anyone why that's wrong. So that's the message that they're leading with when they're looking to recruit for their organization. When they're talking to young black men, they're saying, you have distrust of police. So does the guy running for this party. He's here to, you know, speak on your behalf. But Democrats I talked to were deeply offended by the idea that black men or Donald Trump is more relatable to black men than Joe Biden because he's hawking shoes that look popular or because he has a criminal record. They think that that in their mind shows a lack of understanding of the depth of black men and the idea that they're a monolith and they share the same values or even the same idea that they just don't trust or believe in law enforcement is offensive.
I have to say, Tori, and I can't believe it's 2024 and we're still talking about monolithic black voters as we did in Chicago all the way back to when Harold Washington was running for mayor. Anyway,
it is crazy. And it's something that every voter I talk to, because I was on a college campus when I was also looking to hear from black men. I was out in Midtown. I was in downtown. I was in Buckhead. I really wanted to get folks in different walks of life to talk about what the black vote, the black male vote specifically, means for both parties in November. And they all echoed the same thing. Like, we're not monoliths. And, you know, we don't necessarily have the same ideas. But what we all really appreciate is concerted efforts, like being intentional about reaching us and understanding and listening to us and not just looping us in or grouping us in with black people broadly.
That's CBS News campaign reporter Torian Small. Coming up, caring for your senior loved ones.
It's been very hard. We have sacrificed a lot.
That's next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
I'm Allison Keyes. This week, the globe celebrated Earth Day with plants, oceans, and entire species at risk. But we're also thinking about birds and the threats they face in urban environments.
Flocko the eagle owl spent a year establishing his celebrity, with sightings across Manhattan delighting countless New Yorkers.
I saw him many times. It was always a magical moment.
Sadly, Flocko's journey ended in February, when he died after striking a building. He touched so many people, crowds gathered in Central Park to remember him.
He meant freedom. He meant resilience.
Flocko escaped from the Central Park Zoo after a vandal cut his enclosure netting. Somehow, the bird defied the odds and managed to survive in the city for a full year. A necropsy showed Flacco had 4 different rat poisons in his system, which could have contributed to his death. Cities are dangerous places for birds. The Audubon Society says up to 1 billion birds die in the U.S. each year from window collisions alone.
We need to do protections to keep such things from happening.
Rita McMahon is executive director of the Wild Bird Fund. She's pushing for a new bill called the Flacco Act, which would require buildings in New York to have bird-safe windows with patterns birds can see. Advocates also want cities to adopt non-lethal methods to kill rats. Rat poison also kills birds.
And all these deaths are totally due to human activity. The fact that 3 billion birds have disappeared since 1970 is something we have to take very seriously.
One simple thing we all can do, turn the lights off at night. Advocates say that eliminates one hazard that can help keep birds flying for generations to come. Michael George, CBS News, New York.
Finally, a new installment of our series, Cost of Caregiving. About 53 million in the nation are unpaid caregivers, and many are raising children and taking care of a parent at the same time. CBS News contributor Lisa Ling is among them and introduces us to one who is determined to keep her mom at home.
You ready?
Social media influencer Ty Lewis didn't amass a large and loyal following from giving makeup and fashion tips. When Ty Lewis was feeling alone and in desperate need of community, she decided the only way to find it was to create it.
So a couple of years ago, Ty Lewis started posting videos of her taking care of her mother with Alzheimer's on social media, and her Instagram page exploded.
Mommy said, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Are you surprised by how many people are responding to your page?
No. Mommy has always been a woman that draws people to her, her personality. I curated the page based on what I needed. And I needed support, I needed community, I needed love, I needed people to be seen.
It's okay, yeah.
There are currently 53 million unpaid caregivers in the U.S., and Lewis has built a community online because this is an issue that impacts so many.
We're brushing our teeth.
Over the last decade, the 80-year-old has become unable to care for herself and doesn't recognize anyone, including her own daughter.
Who does she think you are?
Her sister, Dolores.
Her mother lives with her and her family in a condo near Los Angeles.
Tell me about the kind of care that mommy requires.
Mommy requires 24-hour care, so she cannot be by herself. She is unable to do anything, so we have to assist her going to the bathroom, getting in the bed, dressing.
Lewis, like a quarter of U.S. adults, is part of the sandwich generation, raising children and caring for an elderly parent at the same time.
What has it been like to take care of your mom here in your home along with your girls and your husband?
It's been very hard. We have sacrificed a lot, mentally, emotionally, socially, and especially financially.
Medicare, a federal health insurance program mostly for people over 65, does not cover long-term care, often leaving families like Lewis's to fill in the financial gap for seniors who need care.
Okay. Open your mouth.
Lewis's mom was a teacher, and despite receiving a pension and Social Security, it's still not enough to cover it.
How long did it take for her to use up her life savings?
Maybe 8 months. Yeah. Like, you think you have the money there, you think, but no. It's not what you think it is.
Your father was a United States veteran.
Yes, he was in the Army.
Did his retirement, has it contributed to your mom's care at all?
No. And when he passed, everything was cut off. And so they sent mommy a check for $258. That's it. That's it.
When Gertrude's Social Security and pension runs out each month, Lewis and her husband must come up with the rest of the money.
Last year, my mother's caregiving expenses was $90,000. She only made $66,000.
So you're supplementing the rest of it?
Yes.
How are you doing it?
I don't know. You work 5, 6, 7 jobs. You Uber. Like, I'm a literacy specialist at a school 2 days a week. So you hold part-time jobs and you do what you can.
Lewis's story is not unique. Around half of American adults say they are not confident they have the financial resources to pay for care. On average, at-home care in the U.S. costs $61,000 a year. A private room in a nursing home is almost double that.
What kind of crisis are we facing when it comes to caregiving?
It's beyond a crisis point. It's been a rolling crisis, and we're at a catastrophic point.
Nicole Jorwick is the chief of advocacy and campaigns for Caring Across Generations, an organization that works to change caregiving policy and support families and workers.
What should the government's role be in supporting family caregivers?
Family caregivers are supporting the government. We know that family caregivers, according to AARP, provide $600 billion of unpaid care. And that's care, that's obviously money that could be going into the economy if those caregivers were going to work. And so what the government needs to be doing is making sure that those systems are in place so that care is a choice.
For families like Lewis's, it feels like the system is designed to drain them, and it eliminates any hope of generational wealth.
As hard as it is, Ty, would you have it any other way?
No. Because...
Still what, baby?
I said I wouldn't have it any other way. That's what I said.
That's because Lewis feels her mother is worthy and deserving of care. But that doesn't mean she wants others in the same situation.
It's that American dream. Work hard all of your life. Go to work every day. Don't take time off. I work all my life and then I'll have my retirement because I get to live. That's not the case.
CBS's Lisa Ling. That's it for the Weekend Roundup. Thanks for listening. We want to get your feedback. Send us your thoughts and story ideas to weekendroundup@cbsnews.com. Sarah Fishman is a technical supervisor, and Alan Peng provides production assistance. Have a great week. I'm Allison Key, CBS News.
If you like CBS News Roundup, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at Wondery.com/survey.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every episode of 60 Minutes, America's most watched news magazine show, as a podcast. Hear in-depth investigations across politics, news, and entertainment on your schedule. Listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Wondery Plus.